Welcome to the Org Designer Podcast.
Welcome. Welcome to the Org Designer Podcast.
My name's Tim Brewer.
Name's Damien.
Damien from...
Luckily we can edit this stuff.
Hi, everyone.
And Harris Ahmed.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, and great to have you along. Really good.
And we're at the Festival of Org Design 2024, ODEF, and really excited to spend a bit of time chatting with Harris today.
I'm delighted to be here.
Harris, maybe tell us a little bit about how you ended up in org design.
Not by design. It was purely a function of an accident. I was in the insurance industry for the first 5 years of my career, boring stuff, and I knew I didn't want to do that. And when a boss moved over into consulting, he pulled me in, said there's something about some change management stuff, and this was in the 1990s, and about the time when Y2K, if you guys remember, in the big mix. So there's a whole bunch of stuff going on. I was with the Big Four. That point, they were not calling it transformations. That's a sexy word today. Change types of things. And then it just came into a lot of org design. I don't know what it was. Started to do it. And then as it happens in life, you begin to form a reputation for, anything to do with org and change, go call Harris. And so I built a little reputation within that space and then moved on to many other consulting firms, and that's how I fell into it.
That's super cool. We've asked this question of a lot of people, and a surprising number studied law and then decided they didn't want to do that, went into org design. Did you study before you had that career trajectory, and what did you study?
I did an undergrad in politics and economics.
Yep.
I was a dreamer. I wanted to go change the world, and when I realized that's not that easy, and then that's how I fell into the world of consulting.
Changing the world one organization at a time.
That matters.
Harris, maybe tell us a little bit about what you do today. I know that you're still active in consulting. How do people listening to the podcast know, Harris is probably a good fit for our organization? How would they know? What's your specialization now? Because just anything to do with org design is so broad.
It is very broad.
Where's your best work being done at the moment?
No, that's a great question. I look at my life in sort of two chapters. The first was 15 years with the big guys and doing just about a little bit of everything. And that's what you have to do experientially to land where you do. So the last 15 years that I owned and run my firm, which is called Pragmatium Consulting Group, we focus primarily at the intersection of strategy and organization. So just around when a company knows which direction they want to go, northeast 45 degrees, how are you going to figure out how you're going to organize the people, the capabilities to get there? That's our sweet spot.
And so when you say strategy, tell us what's important for strategy to get started then.
In most cases, it's just not there in its full form. It's often half-baked. It's unclear. So I just go in and do a simple test of asking people, what do you think the strategy is? I get six different answers. So then our first step in the org design project is to really clarify what the heck they're wanting to do, because without that, you're just playing a lot of games.
Yeah. Some other really good conversations actually that have gone on is around the people in the organization and how org design affects them. And I'm sure walking through organizations for the last 30 years as an org designer, you see a lot of the impacts of poor org design, or where org design wasn't very considered. Maybe reactive. Tell us about what's your sense when you walk through an organization for the problems that relate to structure? And how do you help leaders see the problems that they're experiencing or the pain they're experiencing? What does it look like? And how do you help them go, it's an org design problem?
Yeah, I mean, you see this all the time. So there's a client of ours, they, in their infinite wisdom, way back when, they said, to limit liability between the different departments and stuff, we're going to just have a bunch of different groups separated by legal names and stuff. So it's a large company. And what they didn't realize is that you just created a bunch of different silos. So there is no unifying culture, no unified organization. Everyone's got their own view. They've got an affinity to that particular group and have nothing to do with the rest of the organization. So that just creates a lot of isolation, silo mentality. So when I talk to them and ask them about things, they have no understanding of the next unit. And that's just not a smart way to design. And when the founders created the organization, they said, this is a good way to keep everything neat and tidy. 30 years later, it results in just a confluence of different ways. They cannot even define what the rest of the company does. So that just requires a lot of unraveling.
What size organizations do you typically work with?
I've focused on the middle market, which is about 100 million to about a couple of billion in size. Mm-hmm. But increasingly, a lot of startups have started to come to us. And maybe I wasn't looking at them before mm-hmm. because they had no money and they would pay me in all kinds of strange things that didn't equate to money. But you know what I think some of the smart founders are realizing that if they don't get the foundation right, it is just very hard to scale up. So just before getting here, I was in Toronto for a startup. And of course, every founder thinks that they've got the next unicorn. So he's, I want you to help me establish the blueprint and organization of a billion-dollar company. Now, this is a startup that has got seven people, three yeah. full-time, four part-time. They're just sitting around. But that leadership team is their organization. Mm-hmm. So while they don't have scale, they have all the complexities, role clarity, not knowing the interdynamics, how their decisions will be made. So it forces you to really apply a lot of the principles, but in a very microcosm of a way.
Yeah. It's interesting you talk about that because sort of the instant reaction is that's thinking a long way ahead.
Yes, it is.
That's thinking from seven people to a billion-dollar company. There's a lot of space in between those two things, usually. Sometimes that happens very quickly. But so what? How far in advance do you think that it makes sense to be planning and doing org design? And how far ahead of your skis should you be getting?
If you asked me the question a few years ago, we would have said 5 or 10 years out. But entire sectors and markets are getting eviscerated in years. So it's got to be long-term enough. But at the heart of what I think, what the work that and how we have changed as advisors and consultants mm-hmm. is just building enough adaptability in the design feature that even if it starts to shift, they can make those pivot changes. We still like to think in terms of 3 to 5 years because that's still valid. In some of the technology sectors, they're just looking at six-month horizons, especially if funding is an issue.
Yeah. I put myself in the shoes of a startup founder, maybe a smaller organization who isn't able to bring on consulting expertise. What should that person do to think about org design just at the very basics in a way that they can make some progress?
Well, I think the biggest thing for them is to think in terms of the capabilities that they need to embed in the organization. They may not have those needs right now, but unless they have thought through what is needed to germinate and then scale the business, it's going to be very difficult to go there. And then it's just classic things in terms of being clear on their leadership operating model, because that's all they've got initially before they get to a large size. So if those things are not set in the foundations, it just gets very hard to add that stuff in. And the underpinnings of all that is the culture that gets formed by a new co.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. Should that person be finishing up their day, putting on some headphones, grabbing some paper and starting to write down, here's all the capabilities I need, sitting at home one evening, or is there a better way to go about that?
No, there is a slightly better way to do this. It is to listen and pay attention to people outside the organization and inside the organization in terms of what they require. And typically, it's a set of things that emerge. And then for that leader to identify, how are we going to acquire that? In most cases, it is a development aspect. So give your people the opportunity, put them in situations where they're going to be stretched to develop those abilities. And that's how you sort of, I do this on an incremental basis. You can't quite bring all that stuff in early into a startup because it'll just collapse.
Harris, a question actually about the conference. It's been a great 3 days, a lot of org designers getting together. What do you think is changing in the org design industry? And for those that are listening to the podcast that might be in an organization where a lot of their job is org design but aren't able to get out or maybe don't even realize that they are an org design geek or are just early on in that journey of discovering that, what's important for them to capture from what you've heard this week listening to some of the leaders in the org design industry?
It's an inflection point happening within the field itself. I think there was a focus on just getting clear on what the work is. We've thankfully gone beyond that stuff. So we're not debating with this org design or that org design, the differences and all that. The lexicon is something that consultants used to get really wrapped around the axle on. But what really matters is if you take the broadest lens on this, the ability to impact, at the end of the day, it probably is one of the more strategic things that any organization is dealing with, is how they go around organizing its skills and capabilities to execute on their strategy. And we've got a whole earful and a head full of various thoughts on this stuff. But I think of all the things, you can't underestimate the impact of having access to data to make those decisions. So many of those decisions were really visceral on the part of leadership teams, that they're thinking that it's a logical decision, but they're really going by intuition. Mm-hmm. Now you've got the ability to perhaps look at this from a data perspective and inform your decision on making changes to either direction or the way that you really even go about organizing your people.
I'd love to talk a bit about dysfunction.
My favorite word.
So many people say that where they work is dysfunctional, but seldom is it 10 out of 10 dysfunctional. It might be a 2 out of 10 or a 3 out of 10 or maybe a 6 out of 10. Where do you see that org design has the most impact, and how dysfunctional do you need to be really worth your time investing into this?
I was taught that the very smart clients perhaps don't need consultants, right? They can solve those things, and it's not really true. I think the bigger thing is what we bring as outside advisors is in a sense of objectivity. Any team has got some degree of dysfunction, like any family does. But the biggest advantage that we bring is that we are outside the jar. If they are not being able to see the label, just from the vantage point of where we sit, are able to bring some clarity to them. And degrees of dysfunction in an organization, there are plenty. But the one that rises up to me is the inability to just address those issues. And most leaders are conflict averse, so they will just do their darndest to just push this down or not address it. And then it just festers and results in all kinds of issues later on.
Yeah. You mentioned the inability of leaders to address something. We often hear about resistance, that a leader's trying to address something, but there's real resistance from the other parts of the organization to that change. But I think what you're talking about is something a little bit different there. It's something more innate to the leader themselves.
Absolutely. Everyone's looking for this high-performing organization. To me, high performance lives between a leader and the person who reports to that leader. And if they're able to get that dynamic right in terms of what is expected and what are the consequences of doing it right or not doing it right, that is the microcosm. If you can get that situation right, that gets replicated and that creates a better performing group, department, or a company.
You started an engagement. You talked then about the leader and their direct reports. That's a set of stakeholders. Where would you go first? Who are the people that you first talk to as stakeholders to understand the change, understand the organization, and where do you get the most insights from about what needs to happen here?
Yeah, ours is a pretty diagnostic-heavy process, so we like to speak to as many people as we can, and ideally a cross-section across the organization and, frankly, outside the organization. A lot is made about the culture of the
customers.
Organization. Absolutely, customers too. Because you can tell me you've got this culture. To me, culture is what somebody experiences outside the company. With their permission, especially their more dear customers, and we'll tell them that we'll behave ourselves, we love to get a few data points outside, either from customers or in some cases their partners, because increasingly these companies are operating in an ecosystem. So to get some of that sort of richness of that coupled with internal data, that gives us a pretty rich narrative of what actually is taking place within a particular company.
I wanted to come back to having those hard conversations, and we often talk about doing hard things or having courageous conversations. Is that something you often find part of org design, is that someone's not having the courageous conversations they need to, and you're actually just helping the leader call out or something that just doesn't seem right in the organization or doesn't seem right to achieve its strategy?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing that we bring as org designers is helping articulate things that have not been articulated. Mm-hmm. So it's in their heads, it's in the ethereal C-suite and the extended team. By listening intently and helping put those in words, mm-hmm. just helps. and then to certainly assist them in having good, we call them crucial conversations.
Crucial that conversations. Need to be added.
And there's typically about 4 or 5 crucial conversations that an organization for some reason is avoiding having.
Mm-hmm.
So setting the table and holding that space for them to have that conversation often results in magic.
Thank you so much for joining us, encouraging everyone out there in the audience to have crucial conversations in your organization. Damien, thank you so much again for joining and leading the podcast today.
Thanks,
as
Tim.
A co-host. Harris, great to have you along. Just before we leave,
yes,
we did get you to search through the org design Oracle facilitation cards, and you found one that you liked called the Organizer.
Yes.
You're still liking the Organizer card?
I do. It sounds like the Terminator, but in a more kinder, gentler
Organizer
way.
Kind of way.
Well, I mean, I think that's the fundamental role that we play as advisors to companies is to help them organize their set of capabilities in a good way. And you've listed a few things there. And yeah, that's what I see as our role and purpose.
Awesome. We're going to give you a set of the cards to take away with you. Thanks so much for coming along. We'll see you all next time. Thanks for joining us from all the podcasts at OODF.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.